This is the Education Exchange with Paul Peterson. I am the senior editor at Education Next. Thank you for joining us. Today, I'm pleased to have Dr. Carrie Wright with me on the Education Exchange. Dr. Wright is the state superintendent of schools for the state of Maryland. She was appointed to this position this past October. And before that, she was the superintendent for the state of Mississippi, where she was the state superintendent for 9 years. Now, 9 years is an amazingly long period of time for a state superintendent. Usually they come and go every couple of years. I have trouble keeping up with them. So she became the longest serving state superintendent in the country when she left. And during that time that she was in Mississippi, there was an event that was later on referred to as the Mississippi Miracle. It captured national attention because the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or NAEP, the nation's report card, showed that Mississippi scores were improving more rapidly than elsewhere in the country. And that was such a surprise coming from Mississippi, which historically was at the bottom or very close to the bottom on lots of indicators of educational accomplishment. So I'm very pleased to have Dr. Wright with me today on the Education Exchange. Thank you, Superintendent Wright, for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Well, let's begin by talking about those NAEP test scores. Sure. How large was the gain in Mississippi?
Pretty significant. We started out at about 22%. Rated as proficient. And by the time I left, if memory serves, I don't have this off the top of my head, but we had raised it to either, it was between 33 and 35%. So obviously not where Mississippi wanted to be, but it was a significant improvement over that period of time. And even during, after COVID, when the NAEP scores were, or the NAEP assessment was administered again, we took a slight dip, but then I'm anxious to see exactly what takes place now, because the NAEP results or the NAEP assessment was just administered again in 24. But I think that the slight dip where others really took a significant dip was really, I think, attributable to all the work that we had done with teachers in classrooms around teaching reading and teaching using the science of reading.
Well, tell me a little bit about the science of reading. This is an idea that has traveled far and wide since you tried this out in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. How would you define it? It's a funny term to me, because reading is reading. What's the science of reading? So what does this term mean?
Well, there's actually decades of research behind it. Even when we selected the strategy, that was before we even started implementing it. And there really is a very strategic, systematic way to teach reading. And there are five components to science of reading. Somebody says, oh, that's just phonics. Well, no, phonics is one component, but you've got phonemic awareness, you've got vocabulary development, you've got fluency and comprehension. And I will add into that, the building of background knowledge is really critical as you are providing each of these components to the science of reading. And so we trained all of our pre-K through grade teachers, both general ed and special ed, in the science of reading, and our leaders at our elementary schools to make sure that they would know what they were looking for when they went in a classroom.
A lot of the research on new ideas like this, they do little studies in particular places and they show it really works well. But then when you try to do it across a state or across a great big school system, it doesn't work in the same way. It just sort of falls apart. So how do you think you managed to keep it together in Mississippi?
Well, I think number one, it was consistent. We provided the professional development year after year after year, and we also provided teachers additional resources that they could be using in their classroom. We set up a website of curated materials, because we were also focusing on high quality instructional materials in classrooms. So we did the best that we could. We also provided coaches for our lowest performing schools. And those coaches we selected those coaches based on their content knowledge around the science of reading and adult learning theory, and deployed those coaches in the schools that needed them the most. So we had coaches working side by side with teachers, giving them feedback, modeling lessons. We used every strategy that we had available to us to make sure that the teachers felt as supported as they needed to be. And we did that every single year. So we were very consistent with our methodology.
Well, teachers love their autonomy. They like to be the boss in the classroom. They really don't like to be told what to do. I'm pretty sure that's been my experience. I'm one of those teachers. So how do you get their buy-in? How do you get them to say, hey, we're going to adapt to this?
Yeah, I think what I think really helped was once we started the professional development, our feedback from the teachers was that they really believed it was the best professional development they'd ever had. It was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea, because they were coming out of, you know, the educator prep programs, not prepared to teach reading. Many of them had been involved with balanced literacy, which is there's absolutely no research behind to support. And so once they saw what it was that was expected of them, and once they saw the amount of support they were getting from the department statewide, it really started to take off and make sense. And so I think the buy-in came from teachers seeing it work in the classroom, that children were actually learning to read and being able to read well. So
is this working equally well with Black students and white students?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I want to tell you, we go back to NAEP for a second. When we, Mississippi has the highest rate of poverty in the nation. And when we gave our NAEP scores, we released those. One of the biggest things I was proud of is that our children, and we were noted by Education Week, actually, for this, for closing the gap between our children in poverty and their wealthier peers, and our students in poverty, be they Black, Hispanic, or white, outperformed their counterparts nationally and regionally on the national assessment. So it was proof positive that this works for all children and not just some children.
Well, so this has been adopted by school districts across the country. I know the chancellor of the New York City school system is now saying we have to have the science of reading across all the schools in New York City. Do you think this is Mississippi has driven this adoption nationwide?
Well, I think it's drawn attention to Mississippi because Mississippi was 50th for decades. And so when Mississippi started in 19, when the NAEP results came out, and Mississippi was number one in the nation for its gains in fourth grade reading and fourth grade math, third in the nation for its gains in eighth grade math, and seventh in the nation for its gains in eighth grade reading, that drew a lot of attention to what was going on in Mississippi. There's an old phrase down in the South that says, thank God for Mississippi, because the states that were surrounding us never had to worry about being at the bottom because Mississippi was always at the bottom. So when Mississippi lifted itself from 50th to 21st in the nation on NAEP in reading, that really, I think, caused a lot of folks to start asking questions. We had calls from probably about 23 to 24 states asking us what we were doing. Right now, there's north of 35 states that have passed legislation around the science of reading. And so we had people that flew in to visit classrooms, talk to teachers, talk to our staff, and to see exactly what was going on and how we made it happen. So we were very happy to share anything with anybody that had to do with children, because that's what we're all in this business about. And so as a result, you know, the many times that I've spoken nationally, I have said, go to Mississippi's website, take down those resources, take Mississippi's name off of it, put your state's name on it or your district's name on it and use it, because there's some high quality resources for teachers on that website.
Well, we're very friendly with Jeb Bush here in our program at Harvard. And did you ever turn to him for advice?
Well, Excel and Ed was a big partner of ours. I mean, I need to be very upfront about that. Jeb Bush and his organization were very strong partners of ours as we were looking at implementation and best practices and how to write a good policy and, you know, things of that nature. And over the years, Excel and Ed has remained a good partner. They're a good partner of mine right now. I mean, they're there on behalf of the children of the United States and making sure that everybody gets a good education. So they are a huge resource for any state chief.
Well, one of the most controversial items in your program in Mississippi was the idea of holding kids back in third grade if they weren't reading. And that's always been a controversy around the country. It was in Florida when Jeb Bush introduced it there. So how do you think that worked?
Well, actually, Boston University, the Wheelock Center in Boston, just conducted a research study of the first cohort of our students in third grade, followed them through sixth grade, those that were promoted, those that were held back, and actually those that were held back outperformed their sixth grade counterparts by the time they got to sixth grade. Significantly, there was no negative impact on attendance, and there was no over-identification in special education. So that was the first study that had been done by a major university on that cohort. So I think that spoke volumes about what was going on. Because the other thing that we did, it wasn't just holding a child back in third grade, because I've said to staff, they don't need another year in third grade. They need a different year in third grade. So what does that look like? So we provided a lot of design around a master schedule, around a reading block, around intervention, around the kind of help that teachers should be providing outside of core instruction for children that had been retained. But likewise, we also provided professional development for those fourth grade teachers who, even though the children may have passed, may still have been below grade level because of good cause exemption. So they needed professional development if they were inheriting children that were still reading below grade level. So we tried to think of it both ways, like what did children in third grade need that was different, but also what did our fourth grade teachers need that may have been different in inheriting children that were still struggling with reading?
Well, most of education is done at the local level. The local Yes. school district is in charge. The state can give advice and they can pass regulations and they can provide money and they can do a lot of stuff at a distance. But how did you get the local districts to sort of sign on to a state initiative? That's not necessarily an easy thing to do.
No, and we had our skeptics, I think, at the beginning, no doubt about that. But I think once our scores started coming up, and I think that was probably at the end of year two, moving into year three, people started really noticing that there was a difference. In fact, every year that I was there, there was not one indicator that we were monitoring that was not heading in the right direction. And I think success breeds success. We also started celebrating those schools and those districts that were making huge progress and recognizing them at boards and as we were touring the districts around accountability. So I think that it really became a way of recognizing that this really was working. And so I think everybody wanted to be seen as leaning in and leaning in hard where this was concerned. Mrs. Ed Week ranked us number two for three straight years on the most improved state in the nation. And that was in 19, 20, and 21. I believe 22s is out yet. So it's even during the pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. So I think what we were doing has really grounded itself well in the educational system. People refer to it as the Mississippi miracle. I'll tell you, it's not a miracle. It's a lot of hard work and using the right strategies and sticking to it over time. It's not doing something one thing one year and doing something different another year. We had too many of our children that were struggling in reading to not really get this right. And so we knew based on the research that this worked. We just had to stick to it and make sure that everybody was trained that was working with small children.
Well, the Biden administration wants to work with small children. In fact, they want to expand preschool programs. Mm-hmm. And I think you did explore preschool education as
yes,
well.
We did.
And so what did you do exactly in that area?
Well, this was the first time in 2013 that Mississippi had ever put any public dollars into pre-K. And so we established these early learning collaboratives around the state, and we put them in the areas where there really wasn't a great deal of access to pre-K, high quality pre-K, and also in districts that had our lowest test score. So we, there's so much research behind, the power of early childhood education that we wanted them in those districts to start transitioning. Then we started keeping track of data. We had a kindergarten readiness assessment, and I changed the kindergarten enrollment form so that parents had to let us know where their children were as four-year-olds. So I could disaggregate that kindergarten readiness assessment based on were they kept at home, were they in Head Start, were they in our public schools, were they in our public collaboratives, or were they in private care or private pre-K. And so we started publishing that data and realized very quickly that the children that were in our early learning collaboratives were outperforming everybody coming into kindergarten. So the National Assessment of Early Education Research has ranked Mississippi for several years now as only one of five states in the nation that meets all 10 of its quality indicators. And so I would take that information back over to the legislature and say, let me talk to you about return on investment. This is how much money you gave us. Look at how well our children are doing. So they increased that each year. And the last year I was there, they had increased it to $16 million and an additional $20 million on top of that because they saw that it was working, and it allowed us then to open more and more pre-K classes across the state.
Well, that raises the question of money. And of course, money is a big issue in a state which isn't a very wealthy state. It's not, you know, one of the states in the country that has pots of dough like California or something like that being generated in Silicon Valley. So how did, I mean, what is the financial situation? Did you need more financial support for these initiatives and did you get it? And so tell us a little bit about that.
We actually, I think we were just good stewards of the money that we were given. I mean, the legislature, when they passed the Literacy-Based Promotion Act in 2013, which kind of was the impetus behind this, and Ex-LNED was really, I think, helpful to the legislature passing this, they'd only funded it at $9.5 million. And I went back across the next year and I said, if you want to get the state off the bottom, we're going to need more than $9.5 million. So every year thereafter, they funded it at $15 million. But in addition to that, they gave us additional money for professional development. We actually had a grant around our coaching model, which was so highly successful. And so when more money and more success came in, we got money for math coaches. We got money for early childhood coaches. So they were recognizing that their return on investment was paying off. And so even though that was not built into the per pupil funding formula, it was given to the agency for us to do what we felt was most appropriate to be doing with this in order to raise the level of education across the state.
Well, congratulations to you for your work in Mississippi, but and you were there for 9 years, and that's just amazing. But I got to ask you, why did you leave?
Well, it's so funny. I really, I decided to retire. Both my daughters are here in Maryland. I had a grandson who was coming up on 3, and I was the only grandparent that he had. And I just felt so strongly knowing how the influence that my parents had had on my girls. And I just thought, this is a good time for a handoff. I mean, it's been a 9-year run. And also it gave me the opportunity to get back to Maryland and to my family and to my grandson, which I just loved. And I opened up my own consulting business and, you know, was doing a lot of work helping districts with the same kinds of things. And then got a call from Maryland, saying that they wanted me to come in and serve in this interim role from October till June. And then I decided to apply for the positions. It's work I love. It's work I love doing. And Maryland was looking to have somebody come in and really, I think, start to put some reform in place. And so we'll see. They're announcing the new superintendent, I believe, next Tuesday. So we'll see if that's going to be me or if that's going to be somebody else. But if it's somebody else, that's great. I've put a lot of things in place here since I've been here a very short period of time that I think are going to make a big difference, and things that are just sound decision making in terms of strategy. So we'll see.
So what are the challenges in a state like Maryland that you didn't face in Mississippi? I mean, as you're further north, it's a little bluer up there. It's a little bit more of a union state, I think.
It is. It is.
So is this complicate life?
Well, I don't know that I'd say it's complicated. Mississippi is a right to work state, so there are no unions, and there are unions here in Maryland. But I do believe in collaboration. And I think once you establish those strong working relationships with the folks that that oversee these various unions, I think that, and you're all working toward the same thing, the same goals, and that's improving instruction in Maryland. Maryland scores have dropped over the past decade, and it's time for us to turn that around in both ELA and math. And so I think everybody's interests are the same. And so it's trying to, for me, it's returning back and it's reestablishing some relationships that I had before and new ones that I didn't have. It's working with a brand new legislature that I've not, you know, worked with before. I've got a very strong board, so that's a real plus, who is leaning into this work and anxious to transform education. So there's things that are different, but there's things that are very similar. All parents want what's best for their children, and that's no different than it is anywhere else. So if we can look at the strategies that we're employing and look at research-based strategies to employ, I think we're going to be in good stead.
So is the science of reading on the agenda of the Maryland School Board?
Yes, it is. In fact, in January, the Maryland State Board passed a resolution that said starting in the 24-25 school year, all districts will be implementing the science of reading. When a lot of the money has come through with the ESSER dollars, one of the, this was prior to my arrival, the districts that were getting money had to select a strategy. And so 23 of those 24 selected the science of reading. So they had started on this path. And so we're continuing down that path. We're going to be providing professional development to the coaches in their districts in both ELA and math. And we're going to be providing additional professional development for teachers and leaders and paraeducators. So we've already kind of got that in motion and looking forward to implementing all that.
Well, you know, one of our friends at our program here is also from the Washington area. It's in fact, the chancellor of the Washington, D.C. school system.
Oh. Christina Grant?
Yeah. Well, it was some years ago, actually.
Oh, okay.
Michelle Rhee. So.
Oh, yes. Oh, my heavens, yes.
Were you associated with her work there?
Yes, I was. I was her chief academic officer right before she left. And what a delight. What a delight to work with somebody like Michelle. She was so student focused and so so driven to improve education in DC. And it was just a real pleasure and an honor to serve on her executive staff.
Well, did you learn some ideas? Did you get some ideas there?
There's a couple of things from Michelle. I think that the one thing that she was very good about was not, I'm going to call it chasing rabbits. She was very clear in her mission about what she wanted to achieve and didn't let others sway her from that, even if she was being presented with a whole ton of money, maybe that wanted her to go in another direction. She was very focused about that. And I really admired that in her, that she, if the money was going toward what we were all, the strategic plan that we were trying to achieve, then I think she was good. But if it was a one-off, and she did not see the value of the one-off as it came to the strategic strategies that we were putting in place, then she just politely said no. And we just doubled down and kept doing what we were doing. So she was a great person to work for and just had a real heart for this work. And the other thing that I admired about her, she was, because DC, over half the, at least at that point in time when I was there, over half the students attended charter schools. And her stance on that was, if we want to keep people in DC public schools, then we need to up our game. Like, we've got to get better because all parents deserve for their children to have the best education possible. And if they feel that best education possible is in a charter school, then that's their choice. But if we want them to stay in our schools, then we've got to be better. And so I thought that was a really good way to look at that. Like, it is about all children succeeding. And if you want them to remain in your public schools, as we do here in Maryland, then we need to make sure that we're providing that quality education for all children.
Well, thank you, Superintendent Wright. Thank you for joining me on the Education Exchange.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Wright is the State Superintendent of Schools for the state of Maryland. I am Paul Peterson. Please join me for a new podcast released every week on Monday at noon Eastern Time.